Hey Coheroes, I've been so thrilled these past couple of weeks at the numbers of women from all around the world who have joined up to this round of my Home Detox Bootcamp. Enrollment for this round closes at 10 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time on Thursday the 3rd of March, just 2 days away from this podcast going live. So if you want in, you'll need to be super quick. Do you really want to wait another 6 months plus to join me and my awesome, supportive Home Detox community to get the help and quality information you need to break up with toxins in your home? If you don't want to wait that long, head on over to homedetoxbootcamp.com to join today. I'd love to have you on board. Alrighty, I'm just going to cut straight to the chase here and let you know that today's episode is a biggie. I've wanted to do an in-depth feature on fluoride in drinking water for a number of years now, but to be honest, I was a little scared to. It's such an emotive topic with strong and logical arguments both for and against, and I really didn't want to get caught up in the craziness of it all. But I simply can't ignore it any longer. The main reason I can't ignore it is because the presence of fluoride in drinking water is the number one reason people tell me that they avoid drinking tap water. Now, as an experienced environmental engineer and scientist, I've been a long-time campaigner against bottled water. The waste issue alone arising from people drinking single-use bottled water is phenomenal, not to mention the emissions from manufacturing and transporting the product to market in the first place. The statistics around bottled water are alarming and include things like the average Australian drinks 14 litres of bottled water per year. It takes up to 7 litres of water and 1 litre of oil to produce 1 litre of bottled water. Tap water has 1% the environmental impact of bottled water. Bottled water production makes 600 times more carbon dioxide, which is a greenhouse gas, than tap water. Discarded drink bottles account for 38% of the total rubbish volume going to landfills. And water bottlers, now I'm not going to name names, but we're talking big soft drink companies here, in Australia are fighting against legislation for a container deposit scheme. Now in my home state, South Australia, we have a container deposit scheme that's existed for over 35 years and return rates are around 80%. Drink container recycle rates for the rest of Australia are typically less than 40%. Put simply, bottled water does not make environmental or financial sense, and because it's typically contained in plastic bottles, I don't believe it makes health sense either, but that's another issue. For almost 3 decades, I've carried a reusable, typically a stainless steel, drink bottle around with me that I've refilled with tap water throughout the day. Now, sometimes this tap water has been filtered, but not always. I've worked for water treatment plants at various stages in my environmental engineering career, and have taken hundreds of water samples for analysis from such drinking water plants to ensure that they meet or exceed the Australian drinking water guidelines. It's always been my belief that Australians boast among the highest quality of drinking water in the world. In fact, there's actually still millions of people around the world who don't have access to clean water supply, full stop. They must envy us like nothing else. Bear in mind, look, regardless of my experience, I'm always up to be proven to be wrong. You know, I'm an engineer with a Master's of Science and I like facts and figures and research. And if there's some new research that comes out there and claims that something has changed, well, I'm happy to change my view. But my interest in fluoride in drinking water and whether or not it's a good thing extends much further than that. Around about 97% of Australia's population live in areas where fluoride is added to the water supply. I'm in the 3% of Australians who live in a town where it isn't in the supply, and I've lived here for 11 years. In the last month alone, 3 of my close friends have had to take days off work and pull their child out of school for a few days to travel to the nearest large hospital. We're talking roughly 600 kilometres away in Adelaide, to have their 6-year-old child placed under general anaesthetic to either have teeth extracted or extensively filled or both. And that's just this past month. So many of my son's friends have fillings or have had teeth extracted. It's just a normal occurrence with his classmates at school. In fact, I still very clearly remember one of my son's kindergarten friends a couple of years ago returning from a holiday in Adelaide with what she called robot teeth. Now, that's what she called her mouth full of silver fillings that were all placed in while she was under general anaesthetic at the age of 4 years. Now, you could easily blame a highly processed, sugar-rich diet for these issues, but another friend of mine, who is as strict with what she feeds her children as I am, that is, they eat a very low-sugar whole foods diet, was devastated when her 7-year-old recently had to get fillings. Look, I don't know if it's luck, genetics or diet that has resulted in my two sons escaping tooth decay so far. They seriously are an anomaly among their friends, and part of me wonders when their luck will change. Now, I'm digressing a little here, but I simply can't get over the rate of tooth decay in young kids in the town I live. It is terrible. But is fluoride in drinking water the answer? I'm on a mission to find out and share my findings with you because I want to know and I want my friends to know and I want all of you to know so you can make the best decision for your family. Over the next couple of episodes, you'll be listening to interviews with both an acclaimed dentist and toxicologist. Now, I originally intended to have all this as one big fat podcast episode, but as you can understand, it kind of got too long, so I've broken it down into three parts. So in part one, I'm chatting to a dentist, part two, I'm chatting to a toxicologist, and part three, I'm going to do a bit of a wrap up and also recommend some products that should you wish to keep fluoride in or out of your water supply, you can choose. Now, there's a fabulous freebie on fluoride in drinking water also available where I've summarized all the findings from this feature, both for and against, including the best ways that you can remove fluoride from your drinking water should you choose to go down that path. And this is available for you to download at lauratrotter.com/fluoride after part three of this investigation goes live in mid-March 2016. But if you're listening to this first episode in early March 2016, you can go there now and enter your details and it will be emailed to you as soon as part three goes live. Now, I'm all about presenting balanced information to you so you can make up your own mind. So without any more chatter from me, let's dive into part one of this series of fluoride in drinking water, where I'm chatting to a man who runs a widely acclaimed naturopathic dental practice in Melbourne, Dr. Agim Heimer. In this interview, we discuss when and why fluoride was first added to drinking water, how tooth decay issues have changed over time, so from ancient times to the early 1900s and beyond, and how decay rates decreased by 60% after the addition of fluoride to our drinking water. We'll cover why the caries, that's cavities rate in the general population, is currently increasing, the extreme difference in issues in patients presenting to dental surgeries in towns where the water is not fluoridated compared to those where the water is fluoridated, the portion of the population where tooth decay issues are most concentrated, how our hospital system is struggling at its current capacity and basically couldn't cope with an influx of tooth decay issues in children should fluoride be removed from drinking water, the links between mouth infections and heart disease and other conditions, including pneumonia, low birth weight babies and premature babies, that our medical system is struggling to address, just why the World Health Organization has listed water fluoridation as one of the top 10 health initiatives that benefits the general population, and why people who floss, brush, and who eat a good whole foods, low sugar diet are not immune to tooth decay. And as a little hint, it's got something to do with genetics. And we'll also be covering the fluoride concentrations in drinking water, toothpaste, mouth rinse, gels, and dental fluoride treatments. I told you it was a biggie. Are you ready? Great, let's go. Welcome to the EcoChat podcast. I'm your host, Laura Trotter, and I'm here to show you how you can create an ecoceptional life you love without compromising your lifestyle. Tune in for inspiring interviews with real-life eco-heroes, plus my own theories, thoughts, and tips for sustainable living. I'm all about making green mainstream, and I'd love to help you on your eco journey. So let's get started. So I'm really thrilled today to have actually my dentist, Dr. Agim Heimer, on the podcast. And Agim has been practicing dentistry for over 28 years in Melbourne, country Victoria and abroad, and is a principal dentist and founder of First Bite Dental, located in North Essendon. So First Bite is a practice that has a strong focus on educating their patients on the importance of oral care, and it's actually one of those leading practices that really puts a lot of effort into prevention rather than fixing up all the damage down the track. So Dr. Heimer's specific areas of interest are educating the public in becoming responsible for their own oral health, also ensuring that the dental profession will always offer the highest standard of care and provide the patient with an informed range of options that allows them to decide on the treatment plan that suits them best. Dr. Heimer travels the world lecturing in many aspects of dentistry. A couple of weeks ago when I was trying to hook him up for the podcast, he was in Europe and I believe he's jet setting to Singapore in a couple of days' time. He leads a very exciting life. He's also senior lecturer for progressive orthodontics, and his aim is that dentists and the public are fully informed in what is available in the world of dentistry. So welcome to EcoChat, Dr. Heimer.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure. Now, as you know, we're going to be talking about fluoride today and trying to just get to the, to the bottom of this issue or help to present a more overall or a balanced aspect of the interest of the issue and both sides. But before we get into that, I just would love you to give us a background to the actual role of fluoride in dental care. What is its role in preventing cavities and how does it actually do this?
Well, let's go back to the history of fluoride and where they initially discovered the benefits of fluoride. There were towns in America where the people in the town had less cavities than those in neighboring towns. And they wanted to try and work out what it was because the diets were very similar and they wanted to work it out. And what they realized was that the water supply in those towns had a higher fluoride content and it was just in the water supply naturally. And a lot of this research was done back in the 50s and 60s. So it's a very long time ago that it initially started. So the role of fluoride they discovered was that when you eat something, you create acidity in your mouth. So whatever you eat, it creates acidity, which is the bacteria helps create the acidity. And it starts to demineralize the tooth. So it starts to break down the tooth. And so as it starts to break down the tooth, if you have fluoride present in your mouth, then fluoride enters the tooth. And it forms a harder compound than what you originally had. So it demineralizes, fluoride then enters the tooth, and now you've got a harder tooth than what you originally had because now fluoride is part of the molecules of the tooth.
Okay, so it's like your tooth absorbs the fluoride in some sort of way?
Yeah, it absorbs the fluoride, and now fluoride is part of the molecule. So it replaces what was lost. And now it becomes a stronger tooth because of that. I'm trying to keep it very simple.
That's good. Simple's good. Does it matter what form that fluoride is in if it's in our mouth?
Well, it has to be there's only one form, the fluoride.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it can be in what I mean is like it can be in water, it can be in a tablet, it can be in a topical
any form,
paste
anything,
or anything.
Anything whatsoever. It can be in anything. Yep. So it can even be in your food because if the food is using fluoridated water, well, then that food would have some fluoride in it too.
Okay. So it basically makes our teeth stronger.
Yes. And it also does have some antibacterial effects because bacteria doesn't love fluoride as well.
Okay. So basically this was discovered in the 50s in America and obviously that study was quite, you know, they worked out that it wasn't, you know, calcium or magnesium or anything else in the water, that the difference was fluoride.
Yes.
So assuming that was a statistically significant study. So where did it go from then? Where did they go from finding this out to deciding to add fluoride into water supplies.
Well, Melbourne University, one of the old professors there, was one of the leading researchers in the topic as well. And he was one of the leading people to push putting fluoride into the water supply. But the problem was, is because yes, it is a toxic product, it's a byproduct from manufacturing, is they had to work out what is a safe concentration for the product. And also not just a safe product, because you also too much fluoride can cause that fluoride mottling of the tooth as well, as you increase the dosage also. So they discovered that the safe concentration in our water supply was one part per million. And so if you put one part per million, that can decrease the amount of decay in a population and doesn't cause the mottling. Now, can that amount cause some mottling? Yes, it can, but it's not as likely to cause it at one part per million.
And so that one part per million was deemed to be safe for, I guess, toddlers right through to the elderly, or are they more concentrating on children that have developing teeth? Is that the target market per se for the fluoride in
No,
the water?
it was for everybody. One part per million for the basic population. For the population. And then what they discovered when they put it into the water supply is the decay rate of teeth went down by 60%. So it was a huge effect that it actually had on the population's teeth.
Okay, and what was this still in the 50s or
Oh,
the
this is
60s?
now continuing on, because the research has just continued and continued and continued since then. But that was the foundation research way back then. So it's all just continued. One part per million, when they started putting into water supplies, the decay rate went down by 60%. And the World Health Organization says it's one of the top 10 population benefits in the world. Like, it's one of the top 10 greatest things that they've done to people. So that's a comment they came up
Well, that's
with.
a big call.
Yep.
Let's just take a snap because I wasn't around in the 1950s or 40s, and I bet you're almost not
No.
around back then, or maybe weren't around at all either. But or definitely weren't around. My father was
I
born in the
wasn't
late 40s, and
around.
he's much older than you. Yeah, I was going to say you weren't. But what, I mean, obviously you would have studied at university. What was the average person's teeth like, at the, in the early 1900s?
Death by dental disease was in the top five in the 1900s. Yeah, that's a fact.
And what is it up
Oh,
to
it's not
now?
even heard of now, with antibiotics and dental treatment and reduction of decay in people's teeth. But it was a humongous problem. Whereas now it's what, car accidents, heart disease, cancer. That'd be the first three. Yeah,
Diabetes
diabetes is going to be a humongous problem.
and Alzheimer's as well. That's one of the biggest one, well,
Yeah,
growing.
so dental decay was one of the top five killers over 100
Wow.
years ago.
And childbirth, I think that would have been in there as
Yeah,
well.
that's right. All those things. The biggest problem we have is sugar. If people take out all the sugar from their diets, then we really don't have too many tooth problems.
So, but the diet in the early 1900s would have obviously we were eating a lot less sugar then.
That's correct. And then if you go back to very old skulls where there was no sugar whatsoever, they didn't have much decay in their teeth. They had more gum and bone disease just from the food sitting around their teeth.
Oh, so they're not obviously brushing or
Yeah.
flossing it out, so it's
Yeah,
still
so
sitting
gum and
there.
bone disease was more of a problem. But as sugar started entering our diets, then a lot of the problems started occurring. And what's interesting now is that because a lot of people's diets are actually getting worse, and we have so much sugar in our diets, and also people aren't drinking the fluoridated water, they're going back to like bottled water, that the caries rate is actually increasing at the moment. So it's sort of interesting that for all these years there was a decrease, but now it's actually increasing again, the amount of holes people are getting in their teeth.
Okay, so when we're talking holes, I mean just an average day in your practice, what are you seeing walking in the
See,
doors in
in
people's teeth?
Melbourne it's not that bad because there is fluoridated water. But to give you an example, when I was working in Mildura, which is a country town, when I first graduated, there was no fluoride in the water supply then. And And they had a big anti-fluoridationist group back then, and so fluoride was never put in. But it was a normal start to the day to go to a hospital and see a child, because you'd have to put them to sleep. You can't deal with it. So I'd go to a hospital twice a week on my way to work and pull out 10 teeth from a young kid.
And that's pretty situation normal in the town I live in
Yes.
too. Although you have to travel 600 kilometres to Adelaide, for the joy of having that procedure done. But yeah, my son's has a few classmates that have had that because, I mean, there is no fluoride in the water here. I can't actually put hand on heart and saying every kid here is eating a low sugar diet because that's definitely not the case as
Yeah,
well. But
so that was a normal
yeah.
day. So that was typical of towns that don't have the fluoridated water who still have the high sugar diets, which is, as you said, is most towns. Whereas you come to Melbourne and you just don't see that often. Like, it's very rare to see it. Like, we would see one child like that every 3 or 4 months.
So every 3 to 4 months, and you used to
Yeah,
see them every
everywhere,
week.
2 to 3 times a week. And that was just me. There was something like 8 dentists in the town. So it was very common. So that's the difference from working in a country town to coming into the city as to what we do see. So fluoride's the number one reason for changing that. And as we were saying before, the issue is that people. And this is my opinion, this isn't anybody else's opinion. People have an opinion, and I agree 100% that we should have a choice in what we do. But the unfortunate thing is that when it comes to teeth, the people with the biggest problems are the lower socioeconomic groups, and it's the lower socioeconomic groups that probably have the worst diets. Their parents can't afford the bottled water. Their parents can't afford the filtered water. Their parents don't spend the time with their child to brush their teeth twice a day and make sure they're given a really good diet. So,
Well, often they can't afford a good diet as
yeah.
well, so yeah, junk food tends to be
Yeah,
cheaper,
and
doesn't it?
they don't really, is it they don't understand? I don't know, but their diet isn't the best. So when you're putting fluoridated water into the water supply, that it really is for the general population. And that's how I see it. It's not for people like me who understands what's going on. We can control our diet, we can do different things. It really is for the majority of people out there who probably don't put as much time into their care. And have a look at anything. The obesity problem's enormous too. So they're eating a lot of bad food as well.
Yeah, I guess our diet is really the, well, there's it's no surprise, is it? Our diet is our is the main cause of most of the Western illnesses and health conditions that we
And
see.
just to go on, tell me if I'm going off track here, but another
No,
issue
totally.
is look at the spending that there is on medical at the moment, and governments are so struggling at the moment with the hospital system, they just can't afford to keep pumping more money into it, and nobody's prepared to pay more taxes to put more money into the system either. So unless you have something that to some extent protects the general population, then you've got that humongous issue of filling up the hospital system as well, because you can't treat kids, and in a dental chair you've got to put them to sleep. That takes up a lot of hospital time, putting them to sleep. And can the government afford to put people, little kids to sleep, or adults to sleep, or whoever? And also, on the adult perspective, the research is out there now that states that if you have a mouth infection, you're more likely to have heart disease. Now, if someone has a heart attack, well, that at least is $100,000 on the public purse just putting them into hospital. So I think that's an issue. Like, those who don't want fluoride, then don't have it. There's a lot of systems, spend a bit of money, don't do it, but have a great diet. But I think for the general population, it is a great thing. And the World Health Organization has done a lot of research on it. And as I said, they say it's one of the top 10 things, that benefits the population.
Okay. Yeah, so I guess there are some people and obviously papers and professionals out there in the anti-fluoride movement that are obviously talking a lot about some of the negative impacts of fluoride, such as the mottled teeth, such as the impact on bone, such as, I guess, even that general dumbing down of the population. I guess they say it can impact IQ, as some of them. And I think there was even a blog, like as I mentioned before, a blog circulating early this week about it being a potential neurotoxin. So I guess what's your point of view on I guess the arguments for a health state saying that fluoride, you know, is a risk to our health?
I've been on forums where people have posted their research, and then I look at the people who dispute what's been put up. And unfortunately, with social media now, you can really say whatever you want to say. Like, you can say anything, mm-hmm. and then it hits the social media, and then all of a sudden it's the truth. So for me, everything that I've read is that if you're doing it at one part per million, there's a lot of research that shows that for the general population, that's actually a good dosage. Now, would there be a bunch of people who are allergic to that? Well, I'd say of course there is, because it'd be like a bell curve.
Mm.
Would there be people at one part per million who still get the mottled teeth? Yes, that's true, but it's really not that significant anymore. Like when we were taking fluoride tablets, no one really knew the dosage, and that dosage is much higher than the water supply.
Yeah. So what's the background on that? Were people generally taking, was it common to take fluoride tablets?
Yeah, because there was no fluoride in the water supply. So people realised that fluoride was fantastic. So that's where we started taking tablets. And that's really where a lot of the model teeth, et cetera, came, because we didn't know the dosage. We would just chew on two or three tablets and that was it. And so that was the problem. But at one part per million, the research shows that for the general population, there's not all those issues.
Okay. So for the listeners today that are still, I guess, not convinced and they do want to avoid fluoride in their drinking water or just in general, do adults and children eating a healthy diet and avoiding juices and soft drink and everything need fluoride to help protect their teeth, or is a good diet alone enough?
The problem is that we're all individuals. And now another factor, like I said at the beginning, was the acidity is the major problem. And the more sugars you eat, the more juices you have, then you increase the acidity of your mouth. But another problem people have is we don't know our own acidity of our own saliva. So we see people who floss, who brush, don't have much sugar, who do everything perfectly fine, and they still get decay in their mouths. And the reason for that is that their own saliva is more acidic. And that's just how they were genetically born. So yes, you could avoid fluoride, you could do all the good things that everybody knows what to do, and you probably will go through life not have too many problems. But if you genetically have a low pH of your saliva, well then you're still going to get problems. And that's the problem. So how are you genetically predisposed to getting decay?
Yeah, I'd never considered it like that, but that actually makes total sense. It's like why in my own family, why some people, we all ate the same diet, but some siblings had more cavities than others. My little sister didn't have a damn filling at all in her baby teeth. I remember that, whereas I had a few, and I thought I ate better than her.
So genetic plays a huge part in it. And so if you're flossing, brushing, low sugar diet, you're going to the dentist, getting your teeth cleaned every, say, 4 to 6 months, whatever you and your dentist or hygienist work out, and you're not having any problems, well, that's fantastic. It works for you. But if you're doing all those fantastic things and your kids are doing all those fantastic things too, but one child is getting decay in their teeth, well, that's because they're genetically, their saliva's too acidic. And so then that child will think about what are your options. And really your options are fluoride.
There you go, guys. You heard it straight from the dentist's mouth, which I guess we've sort of answered this question anyway, but I just wanted to hear your opinion on if you actually believe the public's growing concern, because it is a growing concern. I think the anti-fluoride message is getting stronger out there at the moment. Do you think the public's growing concern about fluoride in our water supplies and even in our toothpaste is warranted?
From everything I read, and I try to run a naturopathic practice, but you know, I've also got a scientific degree that makes me use modern medicine as well. So I try to combine the two together. So I can't be pushed down one side. So from what I read, I would say the research has been out there for so long now, and they've looked at towns that have fluoride, they've looked at towns that don't have fluoride, and then they've gone and compared the disease rate in those towns, like all the medical issues. And so they haven't just looked at the amount of holes in the teeth, they've looked at, okay, what extra medical problems is the difference between the two towns, and they've really found no significant differences between the towns.
Mm.
So all this other research says that, you know, like it makes you a bit, you know, your IQ goes down or whatever the research says, that really hasn't been proven. So that's what I believe.
Okay. Well, thank you. That's why I've got you on the show. I'm really interested to hear, not just from any dentist, you are very educated, and I know that you continue with your education and get to conferences and speak at conferences, and you know, you're one of those dentists that continues to learn. It's not like you got your degree 30 odd years ago and, or 20 odd years ago, and just prop in your little practice. That's why I choose your practice too, because you are very progressive, and so I do value your opinion.
Well, I brought up that issue before with you about measles in Melbourne at the moment, because there's a lot of people who don't immunise their child. So in society, again, the bell curve, would there be some people who have problems with immunisation? It's like, of course there would on a huge mass of people that you're immunising, but the majority of the population is actually okay. Does it overstimulate our immune system? It probably does. Does it cause a few more extra diseases when we're very old? It probably does. But at the moment, we've got a big problem with measles in one of our towns in Melbourne. And it's a big problem, because if that takes off, it's like, well, what do you do? So it's the same thing with fluoride. Would all these people who are anti-fluoridationists, would they be prepared to then go and pay more taxes to get all these kids into the public system? And I can tell you now, the public system has no money for dental. And it doesn't matter what government comes into play, because they've all been talking about it, they just don't have the funds to go and fix the people's teeth. So that's where fluoride does play a part.
And I guess the hospitals don't have the capacity for all these extra patients anyway.
I used to operate in hospitals a lot, and now finding times to go to hospitals is almost impossible. So we've pretty much given up trying to go to hospitals. So we do a lot of things in-house now. But you do it in-house, you're talking thousands of dollars for people just to pay for the anaesthetist to come to the practice. So it's like, yes, you can have all these opinions, but maybe think of it as the whole population and the benefit of the whole population. And, yeah, how much money do you want to spend on treating people, because fluoride decreased the decay rate by 60%? That's huge for a society who's struggling to find money for medicine.
No, it is. What do you have to say for the people out there that are anti-fluoride, simply on the point that, you know, they don't have a choice? So it's mass medication, and it's in my water, and I didn't choose to have it in my water. So who are against fluoride just on that argument alone?
You do have a choice. You can go and buy yourself a filter. You can drink bottled water, but that's more expensive.
And an environmental issue.
That's right,
all
the plastic bottles. Yeah. So there are choices to stay away from fluoride. So I don't know. I don't have the exact answer for it. But from what I know is that it's just horrible, the towns that don't have fluoride.
Yeah, I live in one of them. We've discussed that too. But thankfully, my boy's teeth are holding up well at the moment.
Yeah.
Because I use tooth mousse as well, though. You got me on the tooth mousse.
Tooth mousse is really good, really good. But again, it's not an inexpensive product. Tooth mousse is quite expensive compared to a tube of toothpaste. So a tube of toothpaste could cost you $2-3 at the supermarket, and that's very inexpensive. And a lot of people.
Yeah, but what's toothpaste? Yeah, about $30?
$30 is a lot more expensive. So it's sort of like the Rolls Royce of products. But you still want to use it in conjunction with fluoride.
Let's just get back on that. So if there's listeners today that have young children and they're wanting to know which toothpaste is best to use for their children, because obviously there's ones with higher fluoride content and there's lower fluoride ones as well. I think, yeah. Can you just give us a rundown on those options?
The manufacturers, like all the companies that produce toothpaste, they've worked out and they just put on it that this is for a child. So I think up until about grade two or so that you can use the kids' toothpaste, which is half the amount of fluoride. See, the problem with kids is they not only brush their teeth, but they also eat the toothpaste. And that's not a good thing to do because then you're increasing your fluoride content. So you want the child to brush, rinse, spit, but they don't do that. They eat it. So that's why they've decreased the fluoride content, which I think is about half. Then after that, you can give a child normal toothpaste. And that's because they're more capable of spitting and rinsing and doing all of that. I think that's one of the major reasons for lowering the content in children's toothpaste.
Okay. So it wasn't because children's teeth are more susceptible to getting mottling?
No, it's the same amount, the one part per million. Yeah. That's why they can drink. That's why they can drink tap water. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so is there anything that we haven't touched on that you'd like to add about fluoride or general oral dental care on the whole?
Going back, fluoride toothpaste has a much higher concentration of fluoride in it too. It's not one part per million. Fluoride toothpastes have 1,000 to 1,500 parts per million. So if we look at water, water is one part per million. A fluoride toothpaste is 1,000 to 1,500 parts per million. A fluoride mouth rinse is 230 parts per million. A gel, which just sticks to your teeth, is 5,000 parts per million. And when we do fluoride in the dental, it's 12,300 parts per million. But see, this is all just topical. So that's why you want your dentist to use the suction really well to clean it all out, and then we tell you to keep spitting for whatever's left in there because you don't want to swallow that amount of fluoride. No.
No.
No, that wouldn't be great for you. So there's the amount. So what's in water is actually minuscule compared to what's in toothpaste.
But obviously we're ingesting a lot more water than we are. Yeah. Toothpaste. You
and also
hope.
That's why with kids' toothpaste, you don't want them to swallow it. And that's why they give the lower dosage for children, because they just don't know how to spit, rinse, they swallow it.
Yep.
I believe from having worked in towns with fluoride and towns without fluoride, that for the general population, I think we actually need something like that to help us because it'll be an absolute disaster. And the diets that people are having nowadays are just horrific. And the problems would just be far worse. And it's not just the teeth. The diets are bad for the obesity problem and it just rots people's teeth. And then the mouth infections cause heart disease, pneumonias, low birth weight babies, premature babies. So mouth disease causes so many other medical problems that the hospital system can't afford. So I think other anti-fluoridation is correct. I'm sure there's an element where they are totally correct. But for the general population, I think maybe it's a fantastic thing. And the research is it's been around for so long and they keep researching it too.
Well, thank you very much for your time tonight. Again, I've really appreciated you coming onto the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been, I hope you've got what you wanted out of this conversation. And your listeners too.
I have, I hope so. Yeah, I hope so. I'm sure there's some that will never be convinced, but it doesn't matter. It's more just to get some of the just to get that balanced approach out there and both sides of the argument and let people make up their own minds for sure.
Yeah, and those people who don't believe in it, that's everyone who's got their own choice, but are they prepared to pay more taxes for the medical problems that'll come into play? They probably won't.
Yeah, no, I don't think anyone wants to pay taxes.
You've got to get the money somewhere if you remove fluoride from the water supply. The amount of sugar that's in some of those soft drinks now, and some people, that's all they have. And it's like, that's why for me, I'm so glad there's just fluoride in the water supply, just to stop these people having so many problems. But it just rots everything.
Yeah, well,
sugar's the problem.
It does. It really is the problem.
Yeah, it's a big problem.
I agree. More effort needs to be put on diet.
Yeah, diet's the major one. And hopefully some of your listeners got the point also that genetics plays a big part too. So you might have two kids that know fluoride's perfect, but the other child may need some fluoride. I'm glad we could finally get together, and I hope I gave you the information as to how I see it from a medical and a naturopathic kind of mixture point of view.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's important. Okay, so there you have it. Part one of my feature on fluoride in drinking water, where many of the reasons for adding fluoride to our drinking water supply were presented. What are your thoughts so far? Any surprises there? I must say that I never really considered that genetics would play a role in mouth acidity and hence tooth decay, but that kind of makes sense. It was also really interesting to hear Dr. Agim's experience on what his day-to-day dentistry job looked like when he worked in a country town where the water was not fluoridated, compared to today when he works in Melbourne where the water is fluoridated. It's a pretty huge change for him to go from multiple extractions a week in Mildura to almost none in his current practice in Melbourne. His comments on a struggling public health system that simply can't absorb a large increase in children going under general anaesthetic to have teeth extracted or filled is a very important and valid point too. I mean, would you be happy to pay more taxes for this if fluoride was removed from the drinking water supply? So all of this is obviously food for thought. And speaking of food, a diet high in processed foods and sugar is the obvious elephant in the room in just about every discussion on health, whether it's tooth decay, obesity, or heart disease. Are we taking the easier road by fluoridating the water supply to protect our kids' teeth rather than tackling the big issue here? And that's getting the entire population to just eat real food and ditch the soft drinks and juices, etc. I'm no way near suggesting I have the answers. This issue is definitely a complex one. And hold on to your seats because it's about to get more complex, because in the next episode, part two of the feature on fluoride in drinking water, I'm chatting with toxicologist and former associate professor and leading researcher in health and environment at Murdoch University, Dr. Peter Dingle. Now, Peter will share all his reasonings why fluoride should be removed from our drinking water supply. And if you haven't yet headed over to lauratrotter.com/fluoride, that's F-L-U-O-R-I-D-E, the way us Aussies spell it, head over there now to download your freebie for this series on fluoride in drinking water. All you need to do is just enter your emails and it will be sent to you in mid-March when part three goes live. Now, this freebie is the most comprehensive free guide I've compiled to date, and it includes a summary of key points both for and against the addition of fluoride in drinking water, as well as recommendations on the best water filtering systems and reusable drinking water bottles. Because regardless of whether or not you decide to remove fluoride from your drinking water at the conclusion of this series, I do want you to stop buying bottled water. The summary document will be emailed to you after part three of this series is released, or if you're listening to this episode after mid-March 2016, if you head to lauratrotter.com/fluoride and enter your details, you'll be able to access it immediately. So that's part one down of the three-part series on fluoride in drinking water. Stay tuned to EcoChat because there's so much more juicy info to come. But in the meantime, as always, go out there and continue to help make green mainstream. listening to the EcoChat podcast. I'm Laura Trotter. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd love you to subscribe, share with your friends, and leave a review in iTunes. And if you're keen to continue the conversation, head on over to my website, lauratrotter.com, where you can also pick up your free copy of my e-guide, 11 Steps to Ecofire Your Home and Your Life. Catch you there.